What's got into him?
He can't take criticism.
Well, great. There goes the band.
We love you. We've always loved you. It's This Week in Mormons, everyone. Here, once again, to bring you the best in Mormon news, commentary, and offensive behavior. We are excited to be a part of this, and I'm thrilled, once more, to be joined by my co-host, Al.
Hello, Jeff. I'm thrilled to be here, too.
That might be the longest you've gone during an intro without interrupting.
No, I know. I was trying to decide how I went.
You threw me off my game. I was like, is he...
You know, you got to keep it fresh. We're like, what are we, like 80 years into this thing? And I'm still, every week, keeping it fresh.
This is the 368th episode of TWIM, everybody. Congratulations.
What if we count the weeks that we didn't do an episode?
If 2017 had been like all the preceding years, I believe we would be up cracking at 400, dude. We'd be having that big celebration. We'd be getting there.
That's kind of fun.
I know, but now it's going to take longer.
That's on me, though. Don't blame you. But I blame myself.
Or should you?
Jeff, how are you?
I was about to ask you how you are.
No, it's... Okay. Well, my gosh.
I'll go first. I am delightful. We're just humming along here in the D.C. area, you know?
I noticed you made pretty much everybody that has ever been to Disneyland hate you.
Are we going to get into that now? Do you want to talk about Dwayne? Because Dwayne is my favorite thing of the entire.
I think that's actually a fantastic.
So everyone, before we'll get into how we're doing, because like you, the main thing that's benefiting my life right now is this delicious Mexican key lime pie that I'm eating. But
how do you find such? Oh, you're not in Missouri. You're in Virginia.
Well, we made it though. You could make it too.
Oh,
it's made with components. Okay. You bake it. You set it. It works out great. So I want to talk about a great man named Dwayne. Dwayne is my favorite person on the internet, potentially ever. I'm not sure, Al. Do we agree with that? Is he better than the Chocolate Rain guy? I think he might be the best.
No.
Dwayne
allegedly sucks.
Everything we say right now, we're going to say that the adverb allegedly is in front of it, just so you know, to cover our keisters for...
No, so let me tell you what happened. We got this... Jeff gets this invitation. Jeff is admittedly a Disney freak. He's been... I think you can say that once you've been to a Disney on another continent, you are like too much of a fan for your own good.
I'm dying to go to the Tokyo properties, though, man. Got to go to those someday.
So Jeff loves Disney. And
I do.
Often,
I love Disneyland
often
very much.
Make fun of the affinity that just Mormons in general have for Disney. Like when I was there, it was so bizarre to me that grown people would have a Disney pass and they'd say things like, "Hey, we're all going to hang out tonight. Meet me at downtown Disney." And I'm like, "We are grown people."
And I remember you dealt with this when we lived together in California, where a bunch of the people in the local
baffled.
Single, the YSA ward, everybody's like, "Hey, we're all going to go to Disneyland tonight." Everyone had annual passes.
It wasn't unheard of to see people with like their faces painted on a Thursday night after work. I'm like, "What are you doing? You have jobs."
I'll never forget one of the days when they got you to go along, and everyone's having a good time at Disney, enjoying all the nuances and nooks and crannies that we know about, and you're just kind of like, "Yep, this is great, guys. This is a really good time."
It was
really
so
excited to be here.
Well, so people that are there though, they love it. They're very into it. They pay a lot of money to have season passes to it for some reason,
especially
even though they've seen
now.
It all before. I saw as like a 9-year-old kid, and I've been good. I've been I've yet to see something new.
How much would an annual membership to a country club cost?
I have no idea.
Probably
Jeff.
Even
who
more than a Disney
country
pass.
Clubs?
Disneyland.
Am I 100 years old?
Disneyland is a country club for people who don't want to grow up. I count myself among those blessed few. Or blessed many. They estimate actually there's probably 1 million annual pass holders in Southern California, which is just crazy.
Who estimates? Disney knows, just them tell you.
Well, that's proprietary. They're not going to...
No, a friend of the show sends in a picture of an announcement, which is this lovely couple that the front of the announcement is rendered in some sort of a drawing. I use two R's in drawing. some sort of a drawing of them in a teacup in front of the Magic Kingdom, and they're excited to celebrate their nuptials, and on the back they're making like some Disney-ish gestures and lots of hearts and things
like
that.
And there's a Disney font employed to talk about their marriage.
There's a Disney font. Obviously, these people are very into it. Now, there's not a lot of Disney-themed wedding invitations that come across our desk. Obviously, we're very excited about this. Jeff blurs out their faces and scratches out the names and posts it up on our page.
I am all about securing the PII. I know that's important stuff.
Which was much more generous than I would have done. I think if people take goofy photos, they should have to own up to
and
it.
Be held accountable
for their
sins. Sure.
They don't think it's goofy.
Yeah.
They're excited about it, and good for them. But they have to know. I mean, there's going to be some party that's like, hey, we are grown people drawing ourselves in a teacup in front of a Magic Kingdom as though we were children. We have to know that this is not normal behavior.
Okay, but I'm not even going to take it that far. And the thing to bear in mind is, so we shared the photos on our Facebook page, which if you don't follow our Facebook page, you should. It's a great time. we didn't even make much in the way of like snark, I wouldn't say, from the post. All we said was, hey, you know how we've talked on the podcast before about Mormons sort of have a disproportionately strong affinity for Disney, right?
Like, this is a great example of it.
Here's an example of that. And then we did use some language, which if you don't know us, I could understand being misinterpreted because we're often dry and sarcastic. Or it said, we've pixelated the faces of the belligerents for their own protection. Belligerent being a phrase you use to talk about like people in, you know, opposing sides in a conflict and things like that.
Does that have any relation to deplorables, Jeff? Because that's what
I should have used deplorables, because that would probably have upset Dwayne even more. Because I get the feeling that Dwayne has rarely left the Western United States. And the other
way... So the guy that owned the photo like actually messaged us, was like, hey, can you take this down? We're like, yeah, we'll totally do
that. Whatever.
But then a father of one of these individuals... has been on a mission. He's created a Facebook event of people
it's the greatest thing ever.
To hate on us. He's recruited friends to send messages. He's called us cowards, which I thought was a reference to the Kevin Barney episodes. I was excited to have some back and forth with Kevin Barney. I was disappointed to find it be Dwayne.
And, I don't know that Dwayne gets satire. The best way I could think to describe this is I wonder if Dwayne is the kind of person who thought that the Colbert Report was real.
All right, that's fair. That's
the best way I can describe Dwayne without knowing him, everybody.
We were gentle with him. We're appreciative of the entertainment he's brought our lives today. Jeff was a little bit taken aback, I think, just because it's like the most random thing
for people to flip out about. You want to talk about proportional response. We did this one thing, and of course the guy who emailed us, whose picture it was fine. And we're like, hey, sir, yeah, no offense or anything. Here, yeah, we'll take it down, whatever. And that was the end of it. But instead... this father of one of the two it's been like his vendetta for the day.
We got 37 messages from him. Like, it's crazy. Anyway, all kinds of excitement going on.
I wish you guys could see.
Because I don't watch the Facebook page as much as Jeff. Jeff is more the owner of that. So as this happens, I'm just like, who am I fighting and why, Jeff? And he's like, well, there's a Disney photo that apparently...
And the great irony being that I am the one who shared this, the great lover of Disney. I'm not going to knock anybody for... I'm not going to do wedding invitations as Disney. That's not my jam, but like I like Disneyland. I mean, I'm... I wish you guys could see our...
This calls back to Kevin Beckstrom, doesn't it? I mean, he threatened legal action.
That I'm tempted now to take Dwayne's Facebook page, put red eyes on it like the Beckstrom, and use that as one of our, like our 404 page or something.
For those that don't know, Kevin Beckstrom, owner of Zarahemla Times, we used to link his cartoons, and he took offense and actually went through the trouble of sending a cease and desist letter, which was lovely. And then
it's so because we put his cartoons on the website, but we linked to his website from the cartoons.
That's right. That's right. So we
did have his content,
in the day, I mean, maybe frowned upon, but he didn't have any embeds. And so like we still needed to show people.
And
what was
we
going
made
on.
Them small enough that someone would want to click on them to read them. And,
we were very good patrons
to his webpage. We were trying to drive track. We legitimately.
So we got a cease and desist. And so we had to go in mass and change anything that linked to Zarahemla Times to a photo that said something like Kevin Beckstrom hates.
Well, no. What it says, so if you happen upon any of our, especially our older podcast episodes, we used to do like a monthly check-in at the Zarahemla Times. So go to some of the back catalog, folks.
It's funny because it's a comic strip that no one's laughed at. And so, it's just kind of a fun it's a fun thing to check in on. Because
and the funny thing was,
it's a very random take on cartoons.
I think about how far we've come, Al. Way back then, I relied on you to go in Photoshop and do something as simple as making his eyes glow red and write Beckstrom says no, which is something I could do in 5 minutes my own. But so anyway, Dwayne is my hero. No one has gone to such an extent to create a Facebook event to post about our page on his Facebook wall and say that these are the folks that were publicly mocking the two for loving Disney and being Mormon. Feel free to send them a message or post on their page about how pathetic it is to have someone to tear someone else down in order to feel good about yourself. I don't know that we actually publicly ridiculed them. I mean,
I wouldn't have taken it as that at all. In fact, you do that much work, you kind of got to be excited if it gets picked up and people start talking about it.
Now, the one thing I would like to stress, and Dwayne, if you happen to listen to this, Dwayne says, in our little email exchange, said, let's have this debate in a public forum and we'll see how many followers you gain or lose. Dwayne has challenged us to some sort of a comment off, I guess, on our Facebook page.
A witty duel, maybe.
A witty duel, and he wants to win. And the funny thing is,
we do hereby accept your challenge.
But he did say, I've got better things to do than to play games with you. And I'm like, okay, great. And then he keeps talking. So clearly he doesn't have better things to do because he wants to engage with us in an online duel of
this
words.
This reminds me of the old days. Well, and like, I forget.
We are cowards.
Internet trolls exist. I mean, we have been accused of being internet trolls at times. But like, it's easy to sort of like forget the chat room days of arguing for the sake of arguing and trying to. Well, you still comment on news articles and things. This is still Jeff's domain. Jeff would happily troll people. I've long since moved on from any commenting on anything. And so, like, remembering that people could get so fired up about stuff like this, it's a nice callback to the early days of the internet when all of that mattered.
Well, I'm glad you had fun. You're the one who wanted to hop on the
email
exchange.
Jeff, when was the last time you commented on a news article's website?
Today, I guess. I don't know. Depends on what it was.
See, that's why I love you, man. Like, you will go and read an article.
I'd have to
know. This cannot stand. I will correct this.
No, but I don't do that. I don't read everything for the sake of debunking it and only comment on that stuff. Like if commentary is interesting, I like to read a lot of diverse points of view on the interwebs. I read City Lab or The Atlantic or things like that.
The last time I left a comment on an article was probably 6 months ago on like a TechCrunch article because they made some absurd claim about, They had 180,000 or 180 million customers, and I was like, "There's no way!" Like almost.
By the way,
of
what is up with TechCrunch's random political stories lately? I get it if it's tech related, but sometimes they're just posting stuff that's just straight up political coverage.
I've left TechCrunch for tech meme. I no longer try for TechCrunch.
It's very confusing.
Know.
So anyway. Dwayne, we love you, and based on your Facebook page, you are clearly a Utes fan, so you don't love the Lord's University. I don't know if you've looked at his page, Al, but it's outstanding.
I didn't get as bought up into this vendetta as you did. I mean, like,
I was cracking up. I'm in the middle of work, and all these messages keep streaming in, and it's just a worthy distraction. Look at this picture I just sent you in our chat window, Al. The man loves the Utes. He loves them.
Oh, yeah. Well, he seems like a nice guy, actually.
I'm sure he's also a wizard, and you and I have both been to Harry Potter World. Nothing wrong with that.
All right.
Plenty
anyway,
of
room
for...
we must move on.
So back to my life. I'm super. Everything's great out here. How's your jam going?
It's good. It's good. I'm married still. Still doing that jam. Not a father like you, but I am. I'm just a man. I had a Father's Day recently, which was very exciting. Nothing changed on Father's Day. I kind of expected that to be a different day, but I think without children to revere me.
Were you celebrated as a man at least, for your manhood?
Yeah, no, I mean, I was finally entitled to some chocolates from the Relief Society as they handed them out. But it was disappointing. I'm doing the Whole 30. I've been inspired by a healthy wife to try this. This is where you don't eat sugar and... Mm. Anything that brings you happiness for almost a month.
Eating. Oh my gosh.
Kind of delightful. I've had dreams like very engrossed dreams of a bread roll. You know, and what the I don't know where that puts me on some scale, but
it's like Adkins all over again.
Yeah, sort of. I don't know. It's exciting. I've got like 9.5 days left to go. Really excited to wrap this up before July 4th. I think it's going to be a great time. So,
speaking of, in case, I mean, do you have big 4th of July plans? Anything going on?
Yeah, I'm going. No, we have like a family reunion thing that we'll be doing, but cool. Nothing too crazy.
That'll be exciting.
Yeah, you know, should be good. Should be good. That's my whole world, Jeff. That's my whole thing.
See, I told you, marriage is much more chill. See what happened since you got married? You used to talk to me and be like, well, I was presenting at this and that and traveling to Hong Kong. And then after that, I went to Dubai and I met the president of something. And now you're just like, well, my wife made me some pancakes and it was a great weekend.
I booked my flight to Chengdu, China this morning. But besides that, really
what
nothing.
Are you doing in Chengdu?
Chengdu. I'm on my way to Tibet. I'm going to go and check out
I forgot you told me you're going to Tibet. That's awesome.
Normally I wouldn't drop that, Jeff, but as soon as you start accusing me of being normal, I had to remind you.
Are you letting your wife come on this trip?
Yes, she's coming with me.
Okay, good.
I had a moment. I'm a newlywed. I had a moment where like I had this business trip come up to San Francisco, and I was like, all right, babe, I got to go. And she's like, oh, great. I love San Francisco. I'll come with you. And I was like, well, had this like anxiety attack break.
But this is a business trip where we do business.
I was very taken aback and like I think I'm actually handling the transition into a married man that shares everything very well.
I'm very proud
just
of you.
Just not all the way there yet. And so like I have this business trip come up and it was like this moment of crisis and I pouted a little bit and then was like, babe, I'd love for you to come. This is going to be great. She had a great time. It was awesome having her there. Like good. Married life is good. Is fantastic.
Yeah.
I just have to realize that how I used to sit in hotel rooms and build slide decks and do work may not be scalable as I've always known it. So,
and that is the hard thing. And it's not just, I think, that's not for even every man. You're a workaholic. I mean, you'll just sit there and just crank it out for 18 hours and not even care.
That's fair.
Because some people aren't that way. I'm not as much that way. I'll crank it out. But then if I were by myself, I'd be like, cool. Well, it's like 6 or 7. I'm done for the night. I'm going to now enjoy myself. Right. But
yeah, that's not how I've
I know it's not your jam.
Raised myself.
Different.
Well, it's yeah. So anyway, like marriage is fun though, man. There's a lot of. It's like self-help on steroids or self-improvement on steroids. I have never in my whole life, come up with how I'm going to run my day and then had somebody else come and say, I need you to do this other thing for me if you love me. And she doesn't hinge it on that. But, like, you know, having somebody else's day that needs to happen so that I, like, crazy. It's blown my mind. But delightful all the same.
By the way, our you know, the twin sisters did a show again a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
Our ladies. Did you happen to, Tiffany and Ariane, did you happen to hear the show? They're not going to stop, I guess, until they find out details about your courtship and wedding. I think that they're going to suffocate from holding their breath, but I thought you should know. I thought you should know.
Details of...
They think everyone really wants to know about that.
Let me tell the story.
If you want. It's your business.
Months ago, me and a buddy, I got a buddy, actually my wife and I, we had a mutual friend who's known us for years, and my wife is 6 foot, a yoga instructor, very lovely lady. I'm 6'7", a giant bearded Missourian. And me and this mutual friend, we get together probably once a month. We go out to dinner, a bunch of us, and we'd all talk about how much it sucks to be single. And, you know, as you get older, nobody understands you. And it's all about, and never once in all of these years, like almost going on a decade of knowing each other, it never occurred to him to introduce me to his 6 foot yoga instructor friend. I don't know why, but it didn't. So anyway, I was out in Utah for Education Week. I had actually taken another girl on a date with me, and we were all going to go up and do a big cabin trip in Wyoming. We were going to raft the Snake River Canyon. So we go up there, and I met, you know, my wife actually rode up in the car with me. I was the guy, because I showed up with another girl. I was very unassuming. I wasn't going to be creepy. And so, like, nine guys rode in the other car, and then I had the car with the three girls. I was feeling very fortunate about the straws that I chose. We drive up. We just had a blast, and it was a really good time, and ended up, you know, exchanging phone numbers, which admittedly, in retrospect, I mean, kind of douchey to do while I was on a date with another woman.
Yeah,
yes,
you did the pivot. Yes. The pivot's a tough move to pull off. But
I'd never done that before in my life, and I had this moment where I was like, what I'd done traditionally had never worked. I gotta take big swings here. You gotta go for it. I'm Big Poppy. I gotta go for it. I went for
it. That's fair.
And then like our third date was a trip to Canada for 2 weeks. So we drove up there, not 2 weeks, like a week. We drove up there and had a great time, and like big long road trips sort of were our courtship. And it was great. We dated for about 6-7 months. And then I had this moment where I was like, when I'm dating, I'm like gathering data. I'm trying to figure out if she's crazy. I'm trying to figure out like what our quirks are, how we're going to get together, what kind of mom she's going to be, if she's going to, you know, like I'm just looking for inputs. And once I felt like I had enough data, it was a very binary decision for me. I was like, all right, this one checks out. Let's go. You know,
good
like,
to know that
her.
Your wife is reduced to a bunch of zeros and ones.
Yeah, that's right. She's definitely been in a few Excel spreadsheets, if you know what I mean. And
not a low rent movie that came out of the San Fernando Valley, everyone.
So on the way down, we were going on a camping trip in Bryce, and on the way I went to Walmart and bought a $10 cubic zirconia that almost fit my finger. I didn't realize she had such dainty fingers. I had not paid attention to this. So I got her, it was like a size 94 ring. So I put it in the glove box, because, you know, it's like, it's kind of the Mormon version of a condom in the wallet. You're not sure how the night's going to go. If it turns out good, you want to have something ready. You know?
You're in Utah for way too long, man.
And so we drive on this camping trip. First night, it's kind of rough. It snowed on us, and the food wasn't perfect. But like all through it, it was just like very, I don't know. I just kept having this great feeling about her. And so the next night we drove towards St. George for a happier, warmer location, went on a hike. And so I had not prepped myself super well in like making this leap and taking the plunge, as they say. I just knew I wanted to do it, and figured I'd figure this out. So like I'm out there, and I just had this moment where I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. So I drop on a knee and I'm like, Drake, let's get married. Let's do this. She says yes, of course. But then it was like this.
Hold on, hold on. Is that actually how you asked? Did you say, let's do this? Let's get married. Let's do this?
No, I said,
like,
no, I did the.
Do me the great honor of being my
No,
wife?
I said, will you marry me? And she was like, are you serious? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, are you kidding me? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, I can't believe it. Are you serious? And I was like, I need you to stop saying that. I need you to stop saying that. I need you to say, give me an answer. She's like, yeah, of course. And it was this moment though where like as she was saying that, I was like, I don't know, am I? And she's like, I can't believe we're doing it. And I was like, I can't believe it either. And she's like, what do you mean? And then I start like, of course, if I could take back every word I said after will you marry me, I would. Like everything was just like, well, you know, like we're in love right now. We'll get more in love later, and it's gonna be. We'll
learn
know.
To love each other. It'll be great. Don't
I'm
worry.
Like I'm like rationalizing. Asking her to marry me, and she's like, I need you to stop talking. So we're like, okay. It was quite delightful. And then we just had like, we just wanted to get married real quick after that. So we flew out to Hawaii, invited whoever could come. We set the date about a month away. Jeff tried mightily to be there.
I'm going to regret it for my entire life that I couldn't make it, but I know you understand.
I really appreciate the effort, though. But, I mean, honestly, like, half my family didn't make it. Half hers didn't make it. It was one of those things where we wanted to do it far enough away and inconvenient enough that the people that couldn't make it wouldn't feel bad. And the people that could would be there, and we'd just go and get married. So
that's fair. I'm not even enough of a friend that I took an hour and a half flight to Kansas City.
That's true. I was surprised at that. But No, it was just great. And so like we went from being single, you know, I've dated a bunch of women to get to this point, and like I'm a bachelor sort of for life, to all of a sudden I'm married and done, and it couldn't have been more perfect for me.
And yeah, if you want any perspectives from I on the sidelines, I watched you date a lot of losers. I really did. I didn't say anything because I figured I assumed you'd figure it out. But it would just be my wife and I would both kind of talk about your dating trajectories and be like, I don't know. We'd have whole discussions about this.
Yeah.
Like concerned parents. And I remember we met your wife. Gosh, you guys hadn't actually even been dating that long when we were out there last year, huh? Hadn't been that long.
It was like
yet.
September, October.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, but you could just tell, dude. Back then, I was like, yeah, I think this one's going to stick. You can just tell. You just know.
It's
great.
It was good. We were actually a very good match. She's
a good girl.
She gets my sense of humor, which was that's one that I was quick to make concessions on. I'd end up dating these women that didn't think I was actually very funny. And turns out that's a huge turnoff when I feel like I am making jokes around them that they aren't picking up on. So it helps a lot that she's equally funny, if not more so than I am. We enjoy each other. So there you go. Ladies, female TWIM hosts, I give you this.
They will be back in a couple of weeks to comment, I'm sure.
Wonderful.
This is basically a recurring thing at this point, people. So if you have a problem with those two, send an email to us and I'll...
Jeff will fire them.
I will fire them, or we'll just tease you back and forth and send you snarky responses like with Dwayne. Now, Al, did you see that Vin Angel made a comeback?
Vin Angel tried really hard to make a comeback. Vin Angel is mid comeback.
What is Vid Angel now? That is the question.
Vid Angel. So they were the filtering service, and the way they got big was by offering $1 movie rentals. They were effectively Redbox online. Their model is they would buy like 10,000, probably not 10,000, like 1,000 or two movies, and then as you would rent one on their thing, they would reserve that copy. So you were watching a physical copy, technically, of these movies, and then they offered filters on them. That got shut down by the courts. It's still
in the courts even right now.
Still in there. They're looking for a way to offer legitimate filtering services. And then they discovered that they could use your login credentials to like log into Netflix or your Amazon Video and stream movies through them, and then put their filtering map on these movies so that it would still blip out the F words and skip the stuff. Not as compelling as the $1 movie rental, but still not a bad service. Had they actually gotten approval from these services to do it? Instead, they were just like brute forcing their way with our credentials through people's logins and trying to do this. Immediately got shut down.
Well, yes and no.
By Amazon especially. I tried that night after the announcement and could not get it to connect.
I tried it immediately.
I'm yet to talk to anybody who's successfully using that service.
Amazon, now I can't even link it to my Amazon account. You try to log in, it doesn't work. And they have a thing, both with Amazon and HBO, that say down for maintenance. I love that they say down for maintenance. Like Amazon is down for maintenance. No, Amazon's not down for maintenance. You just can't keep it working.
You guys were trying to do this illegally. They immediately sniffed you out when you spiked the traffic and shut you off.
Well, the interesting thing is that they said they have had discussions with these groups. They just didn't get the formal blessing yet. So it's really a question of
Netflix. Then? Like, what are you doing? Because they did a big launch event.
Oh my gosh!
The switches got everybody back in.
Did you see the launch event?
It was so awkward.
It was an hour and like 20 minutes long, and it's like they thought it was the importance of the first announcement of the iPhone. I mean, you had
the guy was very Steve Ballmer excited esque. He's like,
yeah, yeah.
Streaming. It's like, all right, man, you gotta, you know, like.
Or it was
I
like those
things.
If you ever see funny internal videos of big company conferences for like dialysis companies and stuff like that, it was one of those over the top, very awkward things. So
anyway, brothers Harmon, you guys are trying. You're trying really hard, and I appreciate the spot you're in, but
there's no way this lasts.
The raising $5 million from customers felt kind of shady to me. Especially not giving them the shares that you did and how you did. I mean, it's a pumped up valuation. from what they had. They couldn't have raised any money from like actual venture capitalists at that rate. It was just shady how they did that. And then starting to act like this, you're not being good players in the online video space. I suspect you're going to lose.
And it's funny because they say right now they just have Netflix and then officially Amazon and HBO, but Netflix is the only one that works. And then they say, you know, Hulu's on its way, Google Play's on its way, all the other services are on their way. I just don't see how this is going to be sustainable. The pipe can get shut off at any time.
All of them have in there, you wrote an article about this, but they're all like they all have a thing where you're not allowed to manipulate their video. Like you can't, people can't hot clip to a chunk of a movie and let somebody watch it like a YouTube clip or something. Like they don't allow that stuff for a reason.
Yeah, it's against the terms of service.
Yeah.
So, I did try watching two episodes of House of Cards because I'd always wanted to see it.
How'd it go?
And it was fine edited. It's just a very bleak show. I actually don't think I have any interest in continuing, even though I could watch it filtered. It's just not there for me.
Not super super enthralling. Well, if it's any relief to you, the writing gets really bad, and it's actually a pretty crappy show towards the end.
You're still watching House of Cards, Al?
No, I've dabbled once or twice.
You naughty, naughty boy.
I didn't mean to.
And the other thing is, because they have litigation with three big Hollywood studios, even if those studios have stuff on Netflix right now, VidAngel doesn't have it. So if you actually try to filter down and see how much stuff there is on VidAngel right now, the list is in actuality pretty short. I think you can dig down to look through the categories and realize, oh, I'm not just seeing like the front page stuff they're offering. There's very little behind the front page that they actually have access to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it would be incredibly frustrating to be in their position and trying to give a service but not being able to. They got to be excited about having something, but not the way to do it, guys.
I wish it would work. It's a cool idea, but I don't think it's going to apply. It's not gonna
let's see. Other big news this week. Did you see the 12-year-old bearing her testimony or going up and sort of coming out to her congregation during a fast and testimony meeting.
And then we cover the Mormon news. I don't think I missed this one.
And then who was it? The state councilman like reaches over, is like, sit down. I'm turning your mic off.
So, yeah. Well, I heard the mic went off and she was confused. And then he leaned forward apparently and said, could you please sit down?
Yeah, that's right.
Because she was reading a prepared statement or a testimony that was, it was Savannah, spoke a lot about really important stuff, that God loves all his children. He made us in different ways. A lot of stuff is completely true. And then she said, you know, I believe that he made me gay. That's a doctrinal gray area, but who knows? And then it became a bit of a, I'm coming out and I know God still loves me, which is true. It's really taken the internet by storm, and we knew this. I remember we saw this very quickly after it started going around before a lot of the main outlets picked it up, and we were debating, like, do we want to write anything about this? Because I guarantee most of the coverage is going to be negative. And sure enough, what do we have? Everyone picks it up, and the headline is just that, you know, Mormon leaders censure a girl for coming out as gay.
There's actually been a couple of people that are trying to defend it, right? Because from a policy standpoint, fast testimony meeting isn't a place where you read prepared documents. You know, it's a place where you go and bear testimony of the Savior. Ideally, you know, if you actually go to a fast testimony meeting where that's what happens, good for you. So the policy of the church, you know, maybe a few things she misstepped. As a general directive, though, a policy that I would suggest to all bishops and stake officials everywhere, when you have a 12-year-old that's trying really hard to be brave and reading like a one-page document, even if she's completely off base from a doctrinal standpoint or whatever your perception may be, let's start with not hurting the feelings of the 12-year-old. You can deal with this after. Like, let her finish. Because the guy that got up and spoke after, actually, I thought did a great job of recapping and, like, you know, it was a message of love, like very good positive stuff, and was accepting and kind of supportive. I thought he did a fine job. If they would have just let her finish her read through and, like, deal with that. Now, if that became, like, the popular place to come out, that was what it was. That's different as a thing to sort of try and adjust, but like don't hurt a 12-year-old brave little girl's feelings. Let's start there. Let's start there.
And I think that's true. And there's a lot to discuss on the 12-year-old girl's end and her family and things there as well. But I agree that I think it's, you could let it play and then if, and let her sit down and have her set her thing and then come up and issue remarks or things that are necessary. And our good buddy Kurt Franken from Leading LDS wrote a post about this sort of from the perspective of a leader. He's a counselor in a stake presidency right now. And it is a difficult position to be in. It's really easy for us to like say, oh, come on, counselor, just, you know, be a little more chill about it. Deal with it afterwards. Sort it out. And it's nice to think that, but it is hard to do it when you're in the moment like that. I mean, you know, you're kind of reacting from the gut, and despite having a lay clergy means we don't always have training for situations like this.
That's
what
right.
do you do when somebody comes out over the pulpit? Do you shut it down? I imagine he's still running this over in his head and wonders if he should have done something differently, or perhaps he's not. Perhaps he says, no, I needed to nip it in the bud. This wasn't a testimony. This was veering into areas of not true doctrine, and it's my responsibility to make sure that doctrine is taught from the pulpit, which is true. That is a responsibility of that office or of that calling.
Well, that is the other part that is frustrating about it, because there's what, like 35,000 congregations or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And so you've got these 35,000 bishops that are waiting for somebody to say, how should I deal with this when this happens? And the church is still waiting to say, we don't exactly know. And because, mm-hmm. I mean, like you said, it's there's some doctrinal gray areas there. In terms of like, and I honestly believe that I don't think that the church has like a black and white stance on gay and lesbian people at this point, right? Like, I don't think that the way that they used to look at it of you know, it was a choice and all that, like through the 70s, has gone out the window.
And all that stuff, yeah.
And so now they say, no, we're adamant marriage is between a man and a woman, but we also love our gay brothers and sisters, and we're not sure how everything mixes right now. We're still figuring it out. And so now you got 35,000 bishops that are left with that gray area of like, well, what's the right thing for me to do? And you've got some great ones that are so good and kind and gentle. And then you've got some that are like, hey, listen, the way we did it in the good old days is there's no gay people. I just pretend there's no gay people.
And that's the thing you got to remember. I was talking with Kurt's article about this has been pretty hot on our Facebook page, and there was a friend of mine commenting on it, and I was doing the same, and I argued that the church is more decentralized than we realize. At least it should be on paper. For stuff like this, yeah, bishops, stake presidents, leaders go to meetings and receive training on all kinds of subjects. But if they had training about this, maybe, maybe not, I don't know. But we forget that so many of these things come down to local decisions, right? Yeah. I don't know that Salt Lake is going to have an overarching policy that says, oh, if these specific words are said, then react in this
specific
way. Well,
they don't currently.
Because they don't. And I've heard so many stories from other leaders who have said, you know, I had an issue. I was a stake president and like an apostle was visiting or something, and I asked him about my issues. And the apostle just says, well, it sounds like you're figuring it out, so just keep praying about it. You know, like it's not always...
They don't try to dictate it from Salt Lake.
So often, I think, culturally, we're in a place where we want Salt Lake to tell us every little thing we're supposed to do for some reason. I don't know how we got, you know, backed into this corner, but I think we really are that way. And we forget that local leadership is, though there is a playbook of sorts, it's still local leadership, and it's up to their discretion. And this presidency member was doing the best he could with the tools he had.
Yeah, they don't give much direction beyond the handbook either, right? Like,
no. They don't.
How do we do a disciplinary council? Well, new stake president, you'll figure it out.
I mean, that's why even things like excommunications and things can be big deals. We've had some high-profile ones in recent years, but those are still handled at a local level. Now, I don't know if, you know, for the Kate Kellys and John DeLynns, if in reality they were on the red phone with Dieter or something like that, right?
Don't know.
But yeah, we don't know that. But those things are still handled at the local level.
It is actually a really interesting. You know, a very interesting thing at this point, and especially like for the church. Well, when news outlets report on this, they say Mormons did this thing.
Yep. They treat it as if it's just the
technically
church.
Technically true. Mormons did do this thing. You know, like I'm very, very good friends with a gay couple, these friends of mine out in Colorado, and they shot me a text and were like, have you seen this? What is going on? I was like, I know. There are 35,000 congregations out there. You know, these guys trying to figure it out. the training on like being Christian first, you know, like erring on the side of being good to human beings first has not made it to everyone, and it should have.
And it's, yeah, it's just we're a diverse bunch, right? And I think the one upside to this potentially is that hopefully it's made leaders who might see this wake up a bit and say, oh, how would I deal with this situation if it comes up? Or maybe leaders in Salt Lake are saying, oh, we should think about this a bit more then so we can provide better training and give good resources so that leaders have ways to deal with that.
Yeah.
And I don't like to say deal as if it's an inconvenience. And then likewise, of course, on the girl's side, I've read a lot of stuff that she hasn't been going to church for a while, especially according to...
But it doesn't matter, though. It doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter.
We have no criteria on who can stand up and share their thoughts at a testimony meeting.
That is true, but we do technically have criteria that testimonies should be testimonies and not prepared statements in a way.
I challenge you to sit through any sacrament meeting in the church today.
I don't care about what the reality is. I'm just talking about what a testimony meeting is supposed to be. I into the reality
Well, that's absolutely right. If you're comparing her to some of the other testimonies that have been born, right? Like, I'd much rather listen to her thoughts and comments than listen to somebody talk about how they took a trip to the temple a couple weeks ago and met up with Susie, and Susie's doing well. She passes her love. You know, like, none of that is a testimony of the Savior either. And so it's, you know, like, the ideal, sure. The reality of it, though, is like, it's like we don't, that's not a criteria that we hold anybody to. We've sat through miserable, meandering, you know, like travel logs of being passed off as testimony, and we're fine with it. The stake president would not have shut off somebody's mic and embarrassed them and made them feel
though, and in slight defense of any of that, not that I defend the travel logs. Travel logs might not be veering into preaching false doctrine from the pulpit. There is a risk of that, but
That is the hard thing.
That's the one caveat.
Neither is this, because the doctrine, you know, the doctrine actually is very clear. Of it's not a sin to be gay, right?
Not a sin to be gay, but Savannah did say stuff like, I believe, like, someday I want to be married and have these things. And again, I'm saying this was more just kind of skirting the line, potentially. I don't think anything's that clear. But you could see how someone might say, like, oh, are we getting into territory where someone's basically saying, I believe that someday God will approve of same-sex marriage or things like that.
Well, that's fair feelings
to have, for sure. But I can get it why in a testimony meeting setting, someone could easily say, that's, like, not church belief. Like, we don't want people to get the impression that's true.
That's so hard, though, man, because it's like, we don't live in a homogenous church. I mean, if we don't. Go back to the old days of Prophet Joseph Smith or Brigham Young, and like it was completely fine to disagree on doctrinal topics. We've actually talked about this a lot, it's actually fine for us to hope for a day when gay marriage will have a place and understanding in, you know, God's eternal plan, and we'll know how that all fits.
And just to be clear, I don't know that Al is saying we actually like are endorsing that we want that to be the case, or maybe you are, Al. I'm not sure. I just want to be clear.
I just want to understand it. I want to have some clear definition where my good gay friends and neighbors that I could articulate to them in a way that makes sense to me as a follower of Jesus Christ, of like how they fit in the grand eternal plan. And when we have that, like to hope for that and even speak up in Sunday school and say, hey, listen, I hope for that day too, Savannah. I really hope that day comes.
But then you do talk about forum. I think Sunday school is a place where that could be.
The venue
was interesting for this. It was a bit different.
Yeah.
One thing I do think is interesting is for those especially who think that Savannah was totally in the wrong, you know, the stake presidency member did exactly what he had to do. Okay, that's fine. I think there are lots of points of view on this. I will say, how many times have I been in a testimony meeting or other, and you have heard people get too political? I was in a testimony meeting where somebody talked about all the great things President Trump was doing, and nobody stopped that from happening.
I've
never been in a meeting where someone goes off, and they have gone off about how Obama is taking our country into sin, and nobody has killed the mic. So I do think we need to take a step back and realize that a lot of the times in the church,
double standard. Yeah.
There's a big double standard, because if you're going after typical conservative stuff, nobody cares. But if somebody has the audacity to talk about something like gay marriage, you're like, kill the mic, get her out of here.
Yeah.
So well, there is that to think about.
Kind of an interesting, it's an interesting play, and it's something that I think we'll probably, I mean, we're going to see more and more of until the church sort of clarifies its position and how it handles this stuff. You know, like people that want to, I don't know, like it wouldn't be absurd if you got a, you know, a crazy promotion at work and we're moving and you came up and read through a little dialogue that you'd written out or a poem that you'd written or a song that, like, we see that stuff all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So
hopefully the next time that we get an opportunity, with something like this, that the little girl does not go away feeling embarrassed, but rather supported and loved by her Christian brothers and sisters, which is our goal.
That, and I hope everyone would support somebody else in that position. And also, folks, use this as an opportunity, if your friends are seeing this and talking about the church, to try to clarify and say, this isn't like a policy from Salt Lake. This is what happened because of local leadership, and that's okay.
But teach them about lay clergy. That's right.
But I think it's a good opportunity to explain to people how things work, so they don't think that the official edict from Salt Lake is to just shut that stuff down right away, because it's not.
Right.
Even if we're figuring it out. Let's see here, Al. Interesting information here about the Pathway Program. For the uninitiated, the Pathway Program was started, or I don't know if it was started by BYU Idaho or if it's just something that they sort of co-opted. I'm not sure. But either way, the Pathway Program is run by BYU Idaho. It's an online educational program. It's become very popular. It's really worthwhile. It gives a lot of people a chance to work towards a degree in a more favorable setting and a more affordable setting. And it's done very well for the past number of years. I've known a lot of people who have done it, and they've had good results. And that's great.
Is it free? Can I take a course on there?
Pathway's not free. You do pay tuition, but it's pretty, like, nicely subsidized. It's affordable.
Oh, neat.
But the thing about Pathway, an interesting story out of the Daily Universe over at BYU's, you know, student newspaper, is that the Pathway program will potentially affect the Perpetual Education Fund, the and for those unfamiliar with that, it was announced by President Hinckley sometime back in, I don't know, what, 2000 maybe?
Yeah, it's a
2001,
cyclical loan program for foreign members of the church.
A cyclical low or no interest loan program for, yeah, like you said, foreign members of the church. Now, the reason this might affect them is because foreign members now a lot of the time with access to Pathway, many now are preferring instead to do Pathway and actually get an American degree rather than use the loan apparatus of the church to attend school in their native lands, which makes sense because in a lot of the developing countries where these loans are dispersed, many of them have good schools, but many of them don't have schools that would rival the Pathway program as far as the quality and the clout of the education. So while it's a good problem to have, I find it very interesting that the successful Pathway program could actually sort of cannibalize the Perpetual Education Fund. And, you know, we'll see if it has like a really long-term negative effect on the fund. I'm not sure.
I can't imagine it would, because they would, right now, they said they're still using it to pay for Pathways, right?
They say that they're kind of working in parallel right now, but they have more anecdotal information from various interviews and such where people say, I was doing Perpetual Education Fund, then otherwise Pathway was a better deal for me. I don't want to do that. So it's interesting. It's
crazy. What other one? Let's see. So Nauvoo City Council member. So Nauvoo is an interesting place because obviously there are no Mormons there for a long time. It started coming back. It's a big spike when the temple got built. They get about 300,000 tourists a year, I believe.
Is it really that many? That's surprising.
Yeah, wow. There's a lot of Mormon tourists that come through there a year. There's a booming summer commerce space in the downtown. Like it's. Pretty cool little community. I got some friends that live up there, and I go up there quite a bit. It's just a nice little place. Well, as with any small town in America, you've got some sort of sticks in the mud, if you will. One of them is on the city council up there, where this lady has made some very offensive comments. Beverly Reynolds called for people like this to be tarred and feathered and run out of town. And then she said, You know what happened then back in the 1840s she was referring to. It could happen again, she said ominously. Now, this may seem crazy to you. I've heard...
But not to Al.
I've had the exact same thing happen to me. So I live in Hamilton, Missouri, Caldwell County, Missouri. I've literally had people, like a week ago, a man stopped me on the corner and told me how much he hated Mormons and just could, you know, like he's this old guy cruising through town and just, I hope you're not a Mormon, but those guys, they are just the worst people. They used to harass my daddy back in the good old days. And I'm like, all right, man. It's 150 years ago, dude. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, well, and the challenge, especially around here, is Mormons were not, you know, like sinless saints. The we have stories of like the Danites that were this gang of Mormons that went and fought back, and you know, there's all these sort of players in history. I mean, Porter Rockwell that assassinated a governor, anyone or tried to.
Allegedly.
I mean, like we are not clear of any wrongdoing in history, and so it's not like, I mean, there's for sure people that were on the wrong side of that and probably resent Mormons, but 100 and some years later, you know, the fact that stuff still persists is a lot of fathers passing down to children hatred for a people that isn't really fair. And I mean, but to hear things like you, it would seem absurd to you, Jeff, that when I first moved here, somebody stopped my family. There's 7 kids in the car, 2 parents in the driver's, you know, up in the front. Lady, you know, we're asking for directions. She says, well, hope y'all ain't Mormons. Well, and Dad says, well, why is that? She says, well, because you know what we do with Mormons around here? We throw them in a whale, referencing Hans Mill Massacre all that, right? It's like, this is 2000. This is 1998. Like, are you serious, people? But this is a real thing. So a lot of these old sort of stodgy communities have some of that resentment built in. And it, man, I don't know why people think that's okay, and why there's not more outrage around it. But turns out some old people just gonna be old and weird. And
I think even since then, you can speak to this as well, Al. I think you've experienced this with your company. I mean, doing a lot to revitalize your town, but I imagine there have been tensions because they feel like these Mormons are like coming in and taking over and dominating all the businesses and stuff.
I tell you,
like
it's very few that are focused on the Mormon stuff, but the ones that are so obnoxious. I mean, it's like this lady, how dare you say we want to tar and feather this people? You can't say that. You cannot say that. But in Alabama, there's somebody that's the same racist punk. They've always been saying that about black people. I guarantee it. And it, you know, it doesn't make the news the way that it should. Like, it should just be so crazy wrong for this to happen against any people, for them to be threatened because they're a people. They're Muslim. They're whatever, right? Like, it's not okay. Not okay. But
what is interesting about this Nauvoo episode is it is almost, in many ways, it seems like it is sort of a... hopefully not a repeat, but it's like revisiting this old era back in the 19th century, because I think a lot of this is happening, these tensions, because like you referenced, Al, with the construction of the temple and its stuff, people have actually moved to Nauvoo, just like it was back when. A lot of Mormons are moving in. Back then, Nauvoo was the city of commerce. The Mormons moved in, took it over, and ran the joint. And it's like the same thing all over again, right? People moving there.
That's right. It should give you a lot of empathy for like our Muslim brothers and sisters, where, you know, the idea that, you know, they pick a place and they want to start congregating. They want to move. They want to, like, gather there. It can be a little bit intimidating. It's scary for a lot of these places that see people moving in mass, right? And Mormons are guilty of the same thing. You know, we pick a place. We want to gather there. We move there. And all of a sudden, the people that lived there before get a little antsy about, like, well, now we're going to change the politics, which we do. And now we're going to change the, economy balance, because it does. I mean, you're sort of built to patronize people, that, you know, other Mormon vendors instead of other Muslim vendors or whatever it would be, right? Well, I'm getting my analogies mixed up, but... it should give you a lot of appreciation for what some of these people are going through and some of the tensions that are caused as this stuff happens. And we still don't have a great way. In 2017, we don't have a great way of balancing migrations of people and gatherings of people with what's already there and preserving the way it's always been.
There we go. Al, I would like to go to one where you and I, have some disagreement on this one. Yeah. Article that we put out last week, this week, I don't know when it was.
Who wrote this piece of garbage?
The do's and don'ts of leadership change in sacrament meeting. I think this is interesting. So this actually came from Leading LDS, because talking about leadership, and you've seen this as well. If any of you have been in, especially in a ward, less so in a branch, but still a branch, when they change a bishopric, especially the bishop, it takes up the sacrament meeting. You wind up with this big business where then you have the bishop, his wife, his counselors, their wives, the outgoing people bear testimonies, and then incoming ones also bear testimonies. Often they become thankimonies, things like that. And Kurt wrote an article about this, basically like, you know, this is the problem. It promotes thankimonies. It focuses on the individuals rather than service. Like, we're basically spending the meeting heaping praise on people rather than having a testimony meeting or a sacrament meeting.
Yeah.
And it distracts from that purpose. And then he offers some suggestions on better ways to go about doing this, which are also compelling, I think. You know, instead, maybe tell them in advance, invite them to speak on specific topics, not just to bear a thank you moni. And also do it during ward business. Don't like let it be this post-sacrament crazy thing. Treat it like any other ward business and any other calling that is being changed and, you know, move along. I find this compelling, and I think for the sake of being equitable, it's a fair argument. Al, you on the other hand,
no. Well, so I like
love
the idea,
the big farewell.
I like the idea of conducting it during ward business. I'm fine with that. I think the idea of like inviting leaders to speak on a topic is I think it's dumb. I like if you do some big change, like this is a congregation that has spent the last 4 years growing close to this bishop.
It's a ward family. That's what you want to say.
It's a family. There's relationships. You're sad to see the old one go. You're excited for the new one. How's
it going to be? aren't you sad to see a young women's president get released, but they don't devote the whole meeting to that?
Well, they should devote the whole young women's meeting to that. Absolutely. And they do, Jeff. They actually do.
No. That's a calling that happens in sacrament meeting. I mean, the only ones you could justify doing it elsewhere would be
certainly
high priest, leader, or elders' quorum priesthood callings that aren't done in sacrament.
Certainly they shift the call, but they're not over the entire ward. They would spend young women's meeting actually talking and thanking and being sentimental and a little bit emotional. I think there's this push right now to be this unemotional, unconnected, it's all very systemic transitions, right?
Yeah.
We do it with missionaries where, you know, the idea of a farewell for anywhere outside of Utah has now become like, Utah, I just say, because Utah ignores all the advice from the central governing body of the church and does
whatever
they want.
Utah does what it wants. It just does whatever.
But
it's like the capital
but the
city
rule,
in
the
dystopian
rule,
novels.
Their rule is that you're supposed to not have farewells anymore. And they ask these missionaries to get up there and speak on repentance. And then they give this talk on repentance. And at the end, they're like, and I'm going to Tokyo. And it's like man, like, have a little bit of room for being a human, right? You go to the MTC, you drop them off at the curb, you don't go in and have this big emotional thing.
Why are we
afraid of the emotional moments inside the church? I think we shouldn't be eschewing them.
Okay, not to digress, but the dropping off of the curb is interesting because I don't even think that's the emotional thing, right? It's not like it's purely for emotions. I mean, you and I both got dropped off, I believe, with family going in and doing the whole thing.
I said the prayer in that meeting. That meant I was better than a lot of people.
Al, I also said the prayer in that meeting.
Oh, hello, brother.
This is why we were.
It ruined it because
friends.
I wanted to like cry and sob through the call to serve with my mom, but I had to keep it together so I could go and pray. I was like, that is very disappointing.
I just felt kind of awkward. I was like, why did you guys pick me for this? I'm just like randomly sitting here.
I
had to wonder if it was because the MTC president was a Worthlin at the time and his brother was my mom's boss.
He knew what was happening.
It was all patronage. Even that's not even strictly emotional. That's a positive spiritual experience for a family to see what the mission is all about and understand what they're doing and kind of get buy-in for the whole process rather than just a curb drop off.
Yeah, well,
but I'm with you on.
Well, now
you know,
we're kind of doing the same thing. I mean, like the idea that that a leader that spent the last 4 years loving and working with a ward, how dare, like, what if we took that whole hour and it was sort of an emotional goodbye and excited for new beginnings in this moment. We took 1 week out of 4 to pause and be a little bit sentimental. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I don't think anybody.
It's not even a goodbye, though, necessarily. Assuming it's not because they're moving, it's just a release. The person's still in the ward. It just says, hey, thanks for your service. This has been a serious calling that's taken up a lot of your time and involved a lot of sacrifice.
Yep.
But it's not like it's a farewell. You're going to see him the next Sunday. He's just not going to be the bishop anymore.
Right.
That's, so what be?
I mean, that part is true, but like, I think you have a right to be emotional about
it. And I say this as a very sentimental guy. Like, I admit, when I talked about months ago when we had the big stake ward shifts and all that stuff out here, and it's
I remember you were a mess.
And I was unhappy about the change, and I was also partially kind of like bummed out that I was like, so this is how I go out as Elders Quorum president? Like, I don't get a proper release? I don't get a proper thank you? I thought about that stuff.
I am against like big rambling thank emojis. Absolutely. But most people, man, I have not seen this be a problem. Most people, if they're in that capacity, understand when the stake president says, bear a short testimony, and you know, and have your wife bear short. You know, they get up there and they say, I'm going to miss this. I've loved being here. I've loved serving with you. And I'm excited for Jimmy, Billy, Bobby to come up here and do this next. You know, good luck. It's not like the idea that you want to give them a topic that instead of being able to get up there and just, you know, share a testimony that you need to get them up there to talk about the apostasy. And then they got to squeeze that in the end. Kurt, no, I say no.
One other way to area in which I'll defend Kurt, but what if you have investigators and other people there? People who don't get the way this is all done. Is it more powerful for them to see an emotional farewell to a bishop or to have a solid sacrament meeting with powerful good talks?
Let me answer your question with another question. Is it better for them to be a part of some robotic emotionalist ward? Or is it better to them to see that these people are also humans and they're sad?
It's always better.
I've had
automation is what's taking our jobs
at meetings where this change has happened. And you just lean over and you say, this guy's been serving for 4 years and they're releasing him and calling another one. They don't get paid and it's all volunteer. That's why this is kind of a big thing. And they actually are very understanding.
So you think it's a teaching opportunity is what
Jeff,
you're saying.
Everything's a teaching opportunity.
Everything?
Everything. Okay. Let's see some other quick ones. We'll just mention a few of these. D. Todd Christofferson gives kind of a cool memoir of his time with Watergate. He was actually D. T. Christofferson or Deep Throat Christofferson. I don't know if it sticks, but it could be.
The guy who came out as Deep Throat's dead, though. So
yeah, who we
or is he
allegedly
or is he? This is actually worth reading. There's a full transcript of it. It's pretty interesting. Weirdly, though, the church is jumping on this. I don't know about you, but my Facebook page has a lot of sponsored posts by the Mormon Newsroom now. And sometimes I scratch my head at the stuff they actually choose to sponsor as a post.
It's probably, they've got an agency that's just pushing stuff out.
Yeah, the agency's BonCom. So we know these people. You know who you are, BonCom.
ComCom.
You listen to the show. You're part of our little cabal. Other news, LDS Business College is now selling caffeinated, regular, straight-up Coca-Cola, everyone. BYU is maintaining the purity of its race, apparently, and refusing to sell it, still selling their, you know, specially bottled caffeine-free stuff. But for whatever reason, LDS Business College, which is run separately from the BYUs, made the decision to offer it. I don't know. They don't have any rationale. BYU says they just don't have the demand to offer that stuff, and that's why, which is malarkey. I find this interesting. Why does one of them sell it now, but BYU still will not?
I'm waiting on the
Seasiders should be the first to do this.
There is still somehow some way. Like the church has come out and said this is no longer a thing. Caffeinated beverages are not part of the Word of Wisdom. We're not saying
it's never been a thing, Al. I've been
not anymore. Gordon B. Hinckley was adamant. Jeff, he was adamant.
It's never been a thing, Al.
And so now it's like you got little you know sort of splinter groups that are like, no, we hold to the true doctrine of no caffeinated beverages, not on this school over my dead body.
Orthodox Mormons, yes, exactly.
So
it's interesting,
pretty exciting.
Also, worth reading here. Last week was the 50th anniversary of the landmark Supreme Court decision Loving versus Virginia. If you know the story, it's because in many southern states in the United States, interracial marriage was still illegal up until 1967. So they sued their way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that that was bunk and said, yeah, you can't go to jail for marrying people of another race. Interesting bit of history. Bring this up because at the same time, we happened to pour through some old church manuals, and these are small mentions in not oft-seen manuals, so understand that, but we do still have some Spencer W. Kimball quotes in active church curriculum that essentially dissuades people from marrying those of the same racial background. It's couched in the concept of it's just better to marry somebody where you share economic, social, cultural backgrounds, but the word racial is in there. So that's all. Yeah. We found this. We're not trying to make a huge deal and say the church is racist or any of that stuff, but this does still exist in the manuals, and it's kind of funny that it's still there in this day and age.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's—I mean, it is interesting because I remember going to school at BYU Hawaii. Like the people that would marry in their same culture, which is a nice way of saying also same race,
which is a big deal for a lot of Polynesians.
Yeah, but if you married in your same culture, you had a much higher likelihood of succeeding as a couple. Than those, because there are a lot of people that would get like, you come over there, get excited about these guys, or vice versa. You know, these girls get excited about these boys, and boys get excited about the girls. But they're knowing them in like their college years, and not their who they are and what their cultural upbringing was, and how it is okay to treat a woman, and what a woman's role is, and all that stuff. And they end up going into these relationships a little bit blind. And it was a big deal. Like, we actually got that talk fairly often out there. Didn't dissuade very many couples from going, you know, love, the heart will do what it does. But so it's still, a fairly prominent teaching. But the idea of it being based on race, I think, is a little bit aged and should probably be phased out. Instead, now we use culture. Culture, Jeff.
And you find in all the manuals that mention this, when they reiterate the point for teachers, they phrase it as culture. It's kind of funny. They basically ignore the actual mention of the word racial and just say culture for discussion, but it's still there.
Well, I don't think the time's far off from, you know, as globalization certainly equalizes economic opportunity, it'll also equalize a lot of the, like, what's right and wrong from a how to treat women perspective, and how to, you know, the role of a man in a house perspective. Like, as that sort of equalizes across the globe, I think culture becomes less of a determining factor as well. So the day is coming when all of that stuff quits getting mentioned at all, but it's not there yet.
By the way, speaking of race relations, the Salt Lake Tribune published steps the Mormon Church should take to enhance race relations. And it's almost like a list of demands. It's very serious. Much of it is worth contemplating, certainly.
Yeah.
But it's a much longer list than I thought it was going to be when I opened the link.
a couple interesting ones of like, we should cast a black Adam or Eve in the temple videos. I would love to see that. I actually think
I'd be down with it.
I mean, incredible.
Or at least do what I've always, at least have a fully hit, like a Hispanic movie, not have it dubbed, just have a Spanish speaking shot film.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be awesome.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
I actually think that'd be really cool. The idea of even an interracial couple in there is a little bit thought provoking. Because again, I mean, you're representing.
It's in the manuals, Al. They can't do it.
I know.
It's in the manuals.
I know. A couple interesting ones, interesting requests in there though, that would probably, you know, show the documentary film Nobody Knows, The Untold Story of Black Mormons, to every all male priesthood quorum, women's relief society class, and young men and young women groups.
Don't you like the nice mention that the Salt Lake has to get in every all male priesthood quorum? They're not doing that just to clarify. They're doing that basically as a dig that priesthood is all male. Just thought I'd throw that out there. I mean, that's
they don't say
that.
They don't say all women, but
they say women. Yeah.
A couple of these that it's like, all right, we're not gonna, like, there's not a lot of messages that go out to every single, you know, church member. They want the essay on blacks and the priests to be read from the pulpit. Like, there's some of that that I'm like,
kind of long to read from the pulpit.
Well, that's right.
It's not a letter.
And if I mean, if this was the number one issue, well, this is the hard thing, right? It's probably for Black Mormons, this is the number one issue facing them. For the church, maybe it's not. And so it doesn't get quite the same emphasis as it would if you were a Black Mormon individual.
Yeah, I think there's some fair point. The one I'm not as on board with is they say have the Genesis group, which is a long-standing group about promoting Black causes within the church, essentially active. They've back before the priesthood ban was lifted, they were involved with in discussions even with top brass in the church. But they say they should treat the Genesis group presidency as an auxiliary in the church. So what that means is at the same level as Relief Society, Young Men's, General Presidency,
it'd be callings. Sunday
School, have the Genesis group sitting there as a calling. Not quite sure.
You can't do that for Black members of the priesthood and not like other racial.
Exactly. Then it becomes like an actual racial schism.
To have a committee on over race relations
That wouldn't be bad at all. Yeah. That'd be fine. But I don't think we're going to have that together. Do you have any other quick mentions you want to throw out?
Yeah, we got the polygamist running for mayor of Harriman. Three lovely wives. All
Al's
supported.
Quote
25
was,
kids. Eight kids per wife. I mean, that's a lot of kids going on. He's been a polygamist for a long time, wants to be mayor. He's looking out for the little guy. Also, Mormonism and Buddhism. it's the idea that right now, like some Buddhist traditions are coming into play or becoming popular amongst the Mormons, like meditation, journaling. Yes. All stuff that we're actually pretty wired for. You know, we go to the temple weekly. We go to the sacrament meeting and meditation, journaling is all something that we're very aware of and close to. So there's a lot of traits in other religions that I think would be smart to start incorporating into our own, and it would increase our spirituality.
There we go. Quick mention, Elder Ballard at a devotional to temple workers basically just said that we're building these temples not only for us right now, but we're building temples which will be used during the millennium. So Elder Ballard said, now if we want to be literalist, strict constructionists, as it were, that's a prophet, seer, and revelator saying, we are building the gerund, so whichever ones are currently under construction, temples that will be here during the millennium. Okay, so that really
few.
Means, yeah, now it makes me want to look up the full list of temples currently under construction. So you got Rome, right?
Roma.
Rome, which I don't know if will ever be dedicated, maybe someday, somehow, somewhere. I don't know. I mean, what do you got? Tucson is still under construction. Meridian, Idaho, Cedar City, Rome, Kinshasa. There's a handful. So
that's like what I always say. Those are the important ones.
That's where it's at. Those are the ones.
Also, a star of Hamilton coming to sing with the Motab. Book your tickets now. People, we have loved having you with us. Mm-hmm. If you would like to email us, I'm looking at you, Dwayne. contact@thisweekinmormons.com. Please come say aloha. We'd love to have you.
And visit us this week. Troll us at thisweekinmormons.com on the comments.
Yep.
Do whatever
yep, please.
Want.
Facebook
Likewise,
page.
I guess you can troll us on Facebook, but if you do it out of context, we might have to block you. But in general, you're welcome. We're very permissive. We'll put up with it. We encourage diverse points of view. We do. I actually enjoy that on our Facebook feed. You get a lot of different people with different thoughts, which you don't always get on Facebook pages. Sometimes it's just kind of certain.
Oh, yeah. We're hot button
right?
issues.
We are quite diverse. So please be there on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram when we feel like it, that sort of stuff. And if you've not written a review for our dear podcast on iTunes,
shame.
We still encourage you to do that, folks. It's a good thing to do.
Shame.
It's a good thing to do.
Have a great 4th of July, Jeff. I hope you have a lovely time.
I have, what's it on a Tuesday this year? I don't know what I'm going to do. It's the middle of the week.
We'll be in the club going up.
Something like that. It'll be great. But, folks, I hope all of you will be well and be holy and be happy.
No, Mike. You always sneak it in. You're so quick.
And for Al, I'm Jeff. And another episode of This Week in Mormons is a thing of the past. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
A quarter to three. Beds turned into the sea. All I need is some sleep. Waves crashing over me. giant.